Of the various aspects of the presidential inauguration we witnessed on Friday, one that particularly stood out was the composition of faith leaders who were tapped to participate in the ceremonies. Rabbi Irwin Kula, president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership, spoke out with uncharacteristically strong words about how politicized the religious aspects of the campaign and the inauguration became. And I'm very pleased to have my friend back with us today on State of Belief. Irwin, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here. You're reading my more robust quotes. I guess what I've really deeply felt, and I felt it for a while already, is that religious communities are no longer part of the solution. They seem to be exacerbating the problems. In many ways, we have all used our religious quotes to legitimate and to cheerlead our existing political and psychological positions and predispositions. And that's a very funky role for religion. And when liberals understand the world in a certain way, they seem to always read their inherited texts and traditions and theological positions in light of those political positions. And when conservative religious personalities look at their conservative political positions, they always seem to back them up with readings of their holy scriptures and, mm-hmm. and the wisdom. And something's wrong with that, in that from God's perspective, every single human being is of infinite value, and therefore even the people we most deeply disagree with have some partial truth. I don't care how small that truth is. And if we can't recognize that partial truth and simply use our texts and traditions to buttress, buffer, legitimate, cheerlead, rah-rah, proof text our own positions and demonize the other side, then how are we in any way contributing to building the next iteration of America, which is where we are?
Yeah.
Okay? America has broken down. Now, that's not the end of the world. America won't go away tomorrow, but it has broken down. The social contract is broken down. The public culture is broken down. And my religious tradition says that the first thing you do when you're living in a moment of brokenness, whether it's a famine or a war or cultural devastation, the first thing you do is you ask, how am I complicit in whatever's happening? Not because I'm a bad person, good person. It's not a giant moral drama. It's a kind of psycho-spiritual drama. How am I complicit in this? How am I complicit in the results of this election? Not how is the other person an evil person? How am I complicit in the reality of a country in which some 60 million people could vote for Donald Trump? Not how are those 60 million people so evil? How is a member of the liberal elite? What have I not taken seriously about the challenges facing people, such as there's so much alienation, so much fear, so much polarization, so much disconnection, that a Trump could be elected? Because Trump is a symptom. Trump is a container. He's not important. He's a container for stuff that has been happening, that if you believe that there's deep interconnection and a seamlessness and a oneness between in the universe, yet alone amongst humanity, that we are responsible for too. That's the drama religion needs. And it's a painful drama. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do self-critique before we critique the other.
I have to admit that I feel pulled in two different directions. You, like I, lived in a time when, especially in the more conservative community, the evangelical community, politics was anathema. Stay away from it. Then that changed, and when it changed totally.
Mm-hmm.
And for the community that I come out of, the evangelical community, politics became their religion.
Right.
Okay, so how do we carry out our responsibility related to political issues and the integrity of our religious identity?
So I think that, first of all, we question initially ourselves. And I think this is a really big thing to ask. You and I and many of the people who we associate with, we are all part of, quotation marks, the elite. We're part of the liberal elite. And we've benefited a lot by globalization, automation, cultural and demographic shifts. We need to be really honest about, if we're going to have integrity, we have to be really honest about our role in what's been created. Not how we're okay and somebody else is wrong. And it doesn't mean that someone else is not wrong. We'll get to that. But my pension plan increased in these last 20 years. My donors have more money because of globalization and the financialization of the economy. My life, my ability to take care of my children has improved. I have been a beneficiary, and yes, I've done some armchair activism, and yes, on all issues of identity, gender equality, and variety of different racial equality, all of those identity issues, yes, I've been good at, but not one of them has entailed any significant sacrifice in prestige, in financial, in money, in the perks of privilege, and I have to own that first. For me to engage in the critique with integrity. And that's the hard thing. That's what a spiritual tradition and religious wisdom traditions know best. What politics know best is attack, 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 win, zero sum. And what religions know best is, yikes, we're all in this together, including the people we hate. We're in it together. That's what it means to be a religious and spiritual person. We're in it together. And so what we need to take is, it's hard to take a deep breath. Otherwise, all we'll do is add fuel to the polarization itself. Now, of course, Trump is alarmingly unqualified for this position. But to reiterate the character problems he has, the knowledge deficiencies he has, the values deficiencies, that's not helpful at the moment. Mm-hmm. Right? The first thing we have to do, if we're really talking about integrity, is own who we are in the drama. Because we're in the drama. It's not us against them. We're all in the drama together. And so if we want to resist, and I'm all for resistance, then what we need is wise, compassionate resistance that models the very pluralism we want. Instead, we have a demonizing resistance. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand where it comes from. And I surely understand that as a white privileged male whose Jewishness is completely, completely, completely now white in America, mm-hmm. I understand that even to say that is problematic. Because my body, I will not feel the pain of a lot of the things that we're most fearful Trump does. Mm-hmm. Right? So I get that. So what it means for me to have integrity, and this may be really different for an immigrant and may really different for a person of color, and I have to listen very carefully, but I have to know who I am in the drama, and that is not what the liberal elite has done, not the financial, not the media, not the academic, not the Silicon Valley, and not the political elite. Mm-hmm. Each one of them, in their own way, have not been accountable to what has really happened to the society, a financial elite that is out of control. And that's a liberal financial elite that supported Hillary Clinton and that supports Charles Schumer and that supports Nancy Pelosi. Out of control, that financial elite. Mm-hmm. And I have benefited from their being out of control. A media elite that's out of control, that treats a tweet as seriously as it treats public policy, that treats a click as important as it treats a conversation. That is a media that is out of control. And I understand we don't know what the business models are yet for that, but it is out of control. An academic elite in which presidents of university have lost control over right-wing pressure and academics have lost control over what pluralism is. A Silicon Valley elite that has disrupted millions and millions of jobs and have taken no responsibility for that at all. None at all. That's irresponsible. And a political elite that seems as corrupt to the core that 7% of Americans trust the entire political elite. Now, that's what we, as the elite and who liberals, have to be asking ourselves first before we go crazy about the terrible damage that these other people are going to do.
Erwin, where do you find hope in the face of what we've just been talking about?
I find hope in conversations like this. I find hope every single day people are doing kindnesses. I find hope in yesterday I'm getting into a taxi on 71st and Broadway, and it's cold in the morning, and this couple comes out, and they had a child, and they were ahead of me, and the taxi cab comes, and I say, go, go, go. You got a little baby in the thing. They go, no, you go. No, you go. I'm not getting into that cab. I'm not getting into that cab. And the person was not a person who had at my Sabbath table regularly. It was an other, okay? Mm-hmm. And you know what? There was a kind of connection and a smile. And, of course, I made them take the cab. Mm-hmm. And there are kindnesses every single day. We have a media that only speaks about the unkindnesses, that covers only the unkindnesses. And now we know from a neuroscience perspective how damaging that is. There is so much more kindness in the world. One more on the micro level. My life. When I look at my life, and I looked at my father came in 1938 from Poland, and I'm like living like the way I live, I'm living in the most unbelievable time. I have no time to be cynical. I have no time. I don't have the luxury to despair. I'm not allowed to despair, right? I can't get up in the morning and say, thank you, God, for giving me my soul renewed in the morning, and then be an all day and be a bitter, resentful person. How can I be? But that's if we took our religion and spiritual tradition seriously. How can you be genuinely grateful and then be so demonizing of another person, another fellow human being? Forget about globally, another citizen of our own country. Right? Let's not even go global. Someone who's maybe living 5 miles from where I live. Hope is the easy thing. I don't understand how people despair. Who, at least like us, I understand if you're poverty-stricken living in the street, I understand. I understand if you're a black male, I don't understand how they have hope. That I get. But us? Most of the people who are going to march in Washington, how we have hope? Oh, my God. And on the macro level, we really have to ask. For most people on the planet, right, they're living better now than 100 years ago. And when you're a religious, that's not a response to saying it should move slower or it shouldn't move faster. It should always move faster, right? Things should always be getting. But on a macro level, my God, we all believe in a Messiah that's coming, however we believe that. And that Messiah is not coming today. We say as quickly as possible. But if you're planting a tree and the Messiah comes, my tradition teaches you continue to plant the tree because you must be doing the right thing because the Messiah comes, even though you're not even going to see the fruit of that tree. And then go follow the Messiah after you plant the tree. Because what we're doing right now is the most hopeful thing of all, as long as we're actually doing it, hopefully. So on a macro level, how can you be a religious, spiritual person and not be hopeful? And on a micro level, there are a myriad of kindnesses that we see and experience every single day that we don't take seriously. And that's what spiritual awareness is. I take a breath in the morning. I look at my kids. Somebody's kind to me during the day. I have a job. There is kindnesses every single day. There's so much. Oh, my God, we're not even entitled to be alive. Where did that come from? The entitlement just to be alive. What is the chances? There's almost no statistical chance for me to be alive starting 13.7 billion years ago with a Big Bang. What is the statistical possibility that Erwin Cooler exists in the world for, God willing, 80, 90 years? There's no statistical possibility. So where do I get hope from? That's where I get hope.
Rabbi Erwin Kula is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership in New York City. He's the author of the book, Yearnings, Embracing the Sacred Messiness of Life. And I count on his ability to see beyond the messiness of the moment to call forth some big picture insights, no matter the circumstances. Erwin, it's great to talk with you again. We will talk again soon.
Great. Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. We need it, and we appreciate your support. We rely on your support, actually, to be able to continue this important work as we have since the launch of this show 11 years ago this month. We're counting on you now more than ever, and quite frankly, so are many listeners who aren't able to find the voices that we amplify week after week anywhere else. If you've heard something that you've found to be helpful today, I urge you to share it with others who might also benefit from hearing it. It's easy to do that on Facebook and Twitter. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. That's stateofbelief.com. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. Be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. My guest will include Fred Clarkson of Political Research Associates and best-selling author Frank Schaefer. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That state of belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was. Yes, he was.